This is the first interview recorded with Barbara Nestor on October 11, 1974, in her home in South Central Los Angeles. The interviewer is Sherna Gluck, Feminist History Research Project. Barbara Nestor is a very small, vigorous 90-year-old woman. In fact, her appearance and vigor is of a woman probably 20 years younger. The only physical difficulty she seems to have is in walking as a result of some foot problem and a hearing problem. There are times in the interview when it becomes obvious that she did not hear too well. This first interview is a general autobiographical one going up to 1930 to establish the general chronology of her life from which a plan for the series can be developed. Some of the material, however, in her early childhood will be covered in this interview only.
Make a whole lot of sense to me.
is in
your own, both your personal and political development, that a woman who was involved in the radical movement for so many years, who had a consciousness as a woman, and I want to, through the interviews, I hope to be able to get out how the personal and political meshed in your own life. So what I'd like to begin with is first, if you give me some basic dates and things on your family, when they came to this country, where you were born, your parents' name, that kind of basic dates.
Yeah.
And then I'll figure it all out in terms of how we'll proceed. Okay. So why don't you just start by telling me about your a little bit about your parents' name?
Well, my parents came from Hungary. I was born in Hungary, and I was 4.5 years old when we came to St. Louis.
What was your birthday?
1889 was when we came here, and I was 4.5, so I was born in the latter part of 1884, September the 29th. Mm-hmm. And my father was an Orthodox Jew. He was a great Talmudist, but he had never had any other kind of education except the Talmud. Now, he was a great Talmudist, but he was a patriarch and made life absolutely miserable for us in all the things that thou shalt not do. And women didn't need an education like men, you know. And then when I first heard the Jewish prayer that the man says, I thank thee, Lord, thou hast made me a man, and the woman says, I thank thee, Lord, thou hast made me what thou sawest fit to make me. Always a minor role. It annoyed me as young as I was.
Do you remember how old you were? Your first
the first time when I heard that, I was not quite 11, just before I began reading the Bible. Not quite. And I thought, well, now, why would it make any difference? And then the story of Adam and Eve just didn't make sense. Because if God knew, from the beginning it says God knew the end. And where did the God come from? And then he suddenly got lonesome, and he wanted to make a world. And it said that after he made a day and night and all that, the other things, he made a man by taking a little gust and making a man, and then took a rib out of the man to make a woman. That annoyed me. Why didn't he make them both out of dust if he was going to make them out of dust? Why the women out of Adam's rib? And it just didn't make sense to me. Then I could never understand the thing that when they said that God then chose the Jews, I couldn't understand what he chose them for. They were driven from everywhere, you know, and disliked and hated. And the thing I know about Jews, some were very fine people and some were just not worth the powder that takes to blow them to hell. You know, so they were just people. And when I went to school, and I didn't start until, although we came when I was only 4.5 years old, I didn't start until I was 7. Because I'd been very ill then. When we came to St. Louis, I got some kind of a fever that lasted almost a year. So I didn't start until and then for every holiday I had to stay home and take care of the baby. Every 2 years my mother had a baby.
Were you the first child?
No, the first child died. She was a little girl and she died when she was only 3 or 4 months old. Then I had a brother who was 6 years and 6 years and 4 months older than I. And then my mother didn't have any children for over the 6 years and she didn't care. And then I came, alas, and being the oldest living girl at home, because my brother ran away from Denver, Colorado at 16 years of age because my father wouldn't let him go to work on Shabbat. So you couldn't get a job anywhere not working on Shabbat in Denver, Colorado. So for that davening, the praying and everything, we had a little brook running in front of our house in Denver. My brother had gone fishing in that little brook and caught some little minnows or something. When he came in, my father was so angry at him that he hadn't davened first that he slapped him. And that finished it. The next day, my brother then got to St. Louis.
Well, when did the family leave St. Louis to go to Denver?
Well,
from
St. Louis, we lived in St. Louis until I was 8.5 years old. And one of my sisters, Elizabeth, was just 8.5 years younger than I. Mm-hmm. She was just a baby. But we went to, my father had eczema, and he had been going all over to try to have it treated, and nothing helped him, and he suffered greatly with it. So my brother read somewhere in a magazine that California had a wonderful climate and everything, which could cure everything, which of course was a great exaggeration. So we came to Los Angeles in 1894.
That was directly from St. Louis?
That's from St. Louis, yes. And then I didn't go to school for a whole year altogether. Didn't go, that's all. And but in 1894 there was one of these repeated recessions. At that time they called it a panic. And he couldn't get a job. There was a quarrel amongst the Jews about this and about that. They had their differences too, you know. And the job that had been promised him wasn't forthcoming. So we were really destitute. And my parents were very proud not to go on relief or anything. At that time they didn't call it relief, they called it charity. Mm-hmm. So the rabbi from St. Louis, by the name of Rodinsky, had been called to Denver, and he wrote my father was in correspondence with him, and he wrote, I have a job for you as a sheriff to come to Denver, and you will get $3 a week and all the meat you can use. So my father went first, and then in a few and we stayed yet about another month. We stayed in Los Angeles. And I'm pretty sure that we did have to apply for the charities to get tickets to go to Denver. And you see, my brother had tried peddling glasses at that time. You had those glasses and people fitted on them, they bought them. And people didn't buy very much. So at that time, I was only 9.5 years old. I said, let me try. I wasn't going to school anyway. So I went out, and you know, a little girl like that, they bought for me. And oh, I thought that was really wonderful, because at least I was bringing in some money. And do you
now,
know...
Is that what your father, his occupation had been a shepherd in St. Louis too?
Yes.
And in Hungary as well?
In Hungary, yes, for the short time. Mm-hmm. Yes. Because he was going to be a rabbi, mm-hmm. but couldn't make it to study the yeshiva.
I see. And did your mother have any education in Hungary?
None at all. One of her brothers was a rabbi, a roof, in one of the, it was little more than a village, called Dittenbergen in Hungary. And he wanted to take her, she was a twin, and he wanted to take her with him so she could go to school and learn something. And my grandfather wouldn't, oh no, he won't give up one of his children, you know, or anything. So I didn't think very much of him.
Mm-hmm. How old was your mother when she married your father?
16 years of age. And she never learned to write. She could read what they call the Teitsch Finnish, which means the interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
Teitsch is really an interpretation. Mm-hmm. But she never learned to write. And I tried very hard to teach her how to sign her name, because they became Democrats as soon as they came to St. Louis. There was the guy who was working, you know, for the mm-hmm. politics, and he was fortunately a Democrat. My father and mother did feel Democratic without knowing too much about it.
So they were not involved in the early anarchist or radical movement then?
No.
They were really just tied to the whole Jewish community and Jewish
That's right. But the thing that, that aroused them politically was afterward, the thing that happened to the guy in France, the Dreyfus case, that really, because they would say, do you understand Yiddish at all?
No, very.
No, but they would understand, God will be heating for a shaker, Bilbo. God protect you from
I hear you.
So, where was I?
We were talking about your parents. And
yes.
My
mother felt terrible about having to make a cross, and she wanted to learn how to sign her name. And I tried very hard to teach her, even took her hand, but I couldn't do it. She never learned to sign her name, which was a terrible thing. But they were so orthodox, you know, you can't imagine.
Did your mother wear the shaitel?
Yes, she wore the shaitel, and yet she had beautiful hair.
Mm-hmm.
And
now, were the girls brought in this country?
When we came to this country, there were my brother Ben, who was at that time not quite 11 years old. He was about 10 and a half. I was 4 and a half. I have a sister. She's still living. She's 2 years and 3 months younger than I am. And then the baby, my brother Sam, who was only about 3 months old.
Oh, so when you came over, it was your mother, father, and 4 children?
Yes. Only my father came first, and we came afterward. And I remember we had to go, the only thing I remember, we were quarantined because the baby was sick. And so we were in a hospital in Baltimore. And I remember when the sister to the Catholic hospital wanted to give my mother a banana, my mother said, no, eaten. Darf nicht essen. So das ist Frucht, du kannst es essen. So then my mother took it, Frucht, yeah. So then she did, and I was 4 and a half, I was standing right near her. So the sister said to me, eat. And that's the first word I heard in English, eat. And then...
Now, in Hungary, did your family speak primarily Yiddish or Hungarian?
No, they spoke primarily Yiddish.
Was it a small town that you lived in?
Yes, so you see, their Yiddish, you know, the Hungarian Yiddish is a little more German than most of the others. But they spoke... See, they both came... My father was born in Munkacs. My mother was born in a little country, a little village called Krimia, and the very name is Slav, and now they could both speak Slav, but they didn't speak the Hungarian.
Oh. Now, when you But did you learn Hungarian as a child, or was your only language Yiddish until you came to this country?
Yiddish.
Yiddish.
Yeah.
So you spoke no Hungarian, or very little?
No, no, none at all.
Oh. How large was the town in which you were born?
I was born in a little town called Nagymihály.
I think that may even be where my mother-in-law is from. I'll have to find out.
Nagymihály. Well, if I was to remember, it would be Nagymihály or something like that. Just going after the pronunciation.
And how large a community was that?
Very small. Now, my father was the most helpless being you ever saw. If anyone had a hammer or anything or do anything, it was my mother who did it, not my father. All he did, you know, was practice religion.
Well, was there was a fairly large Jewish community in this town then?
No, I think it was a very small one. Of course, I don't remember it. All
was
I remember... A shul, yes, there was a shul there. All I remember that we lived on a little hill and a little brook down near us. And there was a plank that went across from one side to the other, and my father had warned us all this, we must never cross that plank, we must never go there. Well, even at 3 years of age, I was very adventurous, and when he fell asleep, I thought, here's my chance to go across and see what's there. So I was halfway over when he woke up. We had that kind of an oven where you could sleep on top of it, and I don't really remember it very vaguely, but he woke up. And not knowing very much, when he came out and saw me halfway over, he screamed at me and scared the lip out of me, so I fell over into the brook. Well, he ran down and picked me up and told me horrendous tales, how I could have died, how I could have, you know, been drowned and everything. And it left me with a permanent, permanent terror of water. To this day, I can't swim or anything, and I really have a real terror of it. It fascinates me, but I'm terrorized at it.
Now, did the family, was it primarily for financial reasons that they left Hungary?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
They were poor. Then my father had an aunt who had taken care of him from the time he was 4 years old until he was 12 years old. My grandmother's sister, she took care of him. But when he was 12 years old, she went to England, and she was married there, and then she went to St. Louis. And do you know that she even came at the end of slavery, so they had some slaves. I met Uncle Tom and Aunt Mary when I was 4 and a half years old in St. Louis. And, you know, it's a funny thing that I can never forget them, you know. They were such kindly people. That's the first time I ever saw black people. But my brother tried to learn English, and the first thing they taught him is go to hell, and things like that. So I remember when Aunt Mary said, no, 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 not nice, not nice. I remember, and she told him to learn the nice things, not the ugly things, you know. So, and then before I knew it, I was speaking English. I don't remember.
After you came to St. Louis, then, you say you didn't start school, though, for quite a while?
Well, I didn't start. I became very, very sick. And I was so sick that I passed out, and they thought I was dead. They had even lit candles, you know, and everything. My father rushed to get the doctor to come and give a birth certificate. And one of the women said, poor child, crossed the ocean to die here. And then she said, doctor, I think I saw her hand shake. And he said, well, maybe you're right. And he tried to straighten out my arm as it had been flexed. And then my eyelids closed, and he said, she's alive. And then whatever he did, he revived me, unfortunately. So, these are things only that had been told me that I don't remember. But I was sick for a whole year.
And then when did you start school?
I started school when I was about 7. But then when we left, I had to be home. Every time my mother had a baby after, she didn't have one for 6 and a half years almost. But after I came, she had one every 2 years.
So how many younger children were there then?
She had 10. And there were six younger. So then a little sister of mine died when she was 15 years old, and that's the first time I remember. I was 6 years old. I remember that was the first time that I got mad at God. I said, God, my father says that you can do everything, that you have the power for everything. Why did you let her die? She was only a baby. She didn't do any bad. Why did you let her die? I don't think it's nice of you. And then I got scared. I said, now, God, please, I don't get angry at me. But I really don't know why you didn't save her. And that's the first time I began to question about God's goodness or power.
So as a child, the whole spiritual world and religion were very much a part of your whole life and thought process.
Yes, but it seems to me that even then I had a kind of a levity toward it, that I never took it too seriously, because the Jews I met around me, you know, some of them cursed one another, and this was a little cover, and this was at a miniature shrine, and the Hungarians, I knew that, this is a Yid, you know, a Pasuysul, you know, all that kind of thing. And I grew up, and I didn't really like the Jews myself so very much, you know. I really thought, wishing that I wasn't a Jew.
Why was that?
Well, because I thought, the Jews that came to my father's house, being a shochet, you know, I think there was 100 that I met. Some of them were very vulgar. And when I began reading, I wanted to be a very bourgeois person. I didn't like that. I didn't like that kind of talk. I didn't like the crudity. I wanted to be refined. That's something.
Well, most of them were basically working class Jews.
Yes, they were working class Jews. Some of them were working class, some of them had small businesses. And I remember one of the nicest guys of all, the father of my friend, had a little peach stall. And he was the nicest one of all of them. And then one of the guys who was working for him, an 18-year-old boy, made a mistake. And he got so angry at him, he said, As my heart can say, that man shouldn't can you wouldn't. If you have no sense, you have no right to have years to live. And I thought, what a terrible thing for Mr. Waits to say. How terrible, because the boy made a mistake to do that. So I thought, here he was the nicest one of them all. And some of them were so very vulgar, really. And it just...
When you started school at the age of 7, did you know any English yet, or did you learn all the
I learned English right away, it seems to me. I don't remember from the time that I came that Aunt Mary told my brother, no, not nice. It seemed to me right away I learned English, you know. And then there was a little girl, Mary Clark, who sat next to me, and I thought she was such a beautiful little girl. Blue eyes, curly hair, which I've always admired and envied. And then suddenly she wasn't in school. And I must have been almost 8 years old then. And then going home, I saw where she lived upstairs somewhere there. There was a thing that she had died. And I remember that was such a shock to me that Mary Clark had died. I said, I had to think of it. And I came to see the next day and I said, I don't remember the teacher's name, but I asked her, I said, is Mary dead? She said, yes, she is. I said, why? What happened to her? She said, she got scarlet fever and died. At that time, that ravaged the children, you know. So that was my second bout with death. One of my little sister when I was 6, and here's the little girl that I was almost 8, not quite.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you came out to Los Angeles, then you stopped going to school for a while when you were
I didn't out. Go to school for a whole year.
So the family was in Los Angeles for
so the whole time that we were here. We came here in November, mm-hmm. So I didn't start even at there. We had the plans to leave already, so I didn't. And I didn't go back to school until I was almost 10 years old.
Now, what?
Into the third grade.
And what did you do then during that time? Were you the one that was responsible for the other children in the house?
Yes, I had to look out for the baby always, you know, rock the baby, take the baby out and everything. From the time I was 6 years old, I never slept a night through. I was getting up when the baby cried, giving whatever it was that I...
How did you feel about it?
Huh?
How did you feel about having that burden of taking care of the younger children?
Well, I didn't like it, but I really loved the baby, so I didn't really murmur too much against it. But the thing that my sister Esther, who was born when I was 12 and a half years old, a little brother of mine had died. I have a picture, I'll tell you a family picture of us. And when he was 7 months old, they had that picture taken of him, and 10 days later he was dead. And you know how he died? Because of that goddamn religion. My father thought no male boy must cover his head. So they had a little handkerchief, you know, of one of those colored ones, you know, that you had over his head. And he had been very sick that day. They had the doctor, and I stayed home from school to help take care of him. And he slept between my mother and me in bed, and I woke up in the middle of the night and felt the baby, and it was he was ice cold. And I said, "Mama, Mama, the baby, something happened to the baby, it's ice cold, and he's not breathing." So, you know, it was Friday night. You couldn't even turn the light on. But the Jewish religion does give you permission, if in sickness you can turn on the light. He was dead because he had, in his sickness, he had pulled that handkerchief over his face and smothered to death. And everything. Well, I've often felt sorry that I didn't know about that law, I mean, enough to tell my father, "See what your God is?" Because I was delighted in exposing God all this to my father.
Was there some basic tension between you and your father because of the religious problem?
Yes. When my father found out that I had gone to a socialist meeting when I was 16 and a half years old, and he said, "What were you doing in a socialist meeting?" And I said, "Papa, what do you really know about socialism?" He says, "Well, they say that socialism doesn't believe in God, and they don't believe in getting married or anything." I said, "Look, Papa, socialism has nothing to do with God or anything. Socialism is only that they believe that everybody should have the chance to develop whatever they have, that everybody is just as good as everybody else. No one is any better, no matter how high they are or how low they are. They're all human beings and have the..." He says, "Well, but that's what God wants." I said, "Then the socialists are trying to bring what God wants for that socialism." I had heard one socialist speaker, Stick Wilson.
I don't know the name.
He was the first socialist mayor of Berkeley, and he was a very mild socialist. He came to Denver to speak in Denver, yes. He had a brother, Ben, who also was a socialist.
Did you happen to find out about that meeting?
Well, you see, we lived in Denver, which had the famous National Jewish Hospital, and people from all over the country came to for tuberculosis. A young man came, and you know I was always reading, and you know how book lovers are. He stopped me once, he said, "You're always reading, what are you reading?" And I was 16 at that time. And I said, "Mr. Nathanson, before I answer you, can I ask you a question?" He said, "Go ahead and ask." I said, "Do you believe in God?" He said, "Why do you ask?" I said, "Because I can't believe in him." I said, "Look, all the people that were burned to death and he never helped them, and the people that are sick and everything, all the things that happened, I don't know that God has ever helped anybody. How can you believe in anything like that?" And he says, "I think you're ready for all that." And he brought me Summer States of Moses by Ingersoll. And if you've ever read anything by Ingersoll, have you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know how his way of making fun of the thing is just delicious. And he knows the Bible. And he did. Well, see, all this, you know, feeling as I did about the Bible anyway, I fully agreed with Ingersoll. And I didn't know he was a reactionary Republican politically. But as far as the exposing the Bible, he was marvelous. His language was perfect, and he did. He just showed this God who delighted in sacrifices, the smell of burning flesh, whether it was human or lambs, delighted him. and all the things you know about the Bible.
What sort of things were you reading up until then?
Well, you see, when I was 11 years, I told you that my little sister that was born, that I was 8 and a half years older than she was. But we were in Denver. She was only a little... No. She was only a little over a year old. And she was in the buggy. Now, when we came to Denver, the plants and everything just delighted me, and I was just crazy about them. So my mother got slips from all kinds of neighbors, you know, and I planted them in little pots, and I'd watch them, and I'd say, Mama, there's some more leaves on this one and this one. So locking the baby in the and my father was taking a nap in the front room. When I went over to, I got tired of it, I went over to look at my plants. And the baby woke, and not seeing me, leaned over from the buggy and fell out and began to cry. And my father came out furious at me for leaving the baby at all. And he went there, and then he saw, he took all those plants and just knocked them off. And, you know, for 1 minute, if he had killed me, I couldn't have felt worse. I gave him one look of such anger, such hate, and ran out of the house and didn't come back. And I walked down until I come to that little brook that I said was in front of our house. Well, it meandered for several blocks past. I went down and sat down near that brook, you know, and stayed there, and I found a lamp there and everything. And then my brother went looking for me, you know, and found me and just carried me home to tell him. But my father said, I thought he was going to be furious, and I was going to justify him anyway. As young as I was, you know, I was so angry at him. But he did say that. He said, don't. And that's all. He never said a word to me, which surprised me very much. But I never looked at a plant for years and years. I couldn't bear to look at a plant or touch him. No plants and no anything, you know. So it took me years and years to be able to do it.
Did you stay in school? How long did you stay in school in Denver?
Only up to the 7th grade. And then I'll tell you, you see, I began reading the first book I ever read, and I found a copy of it for 10 cents in the Volunteers of America. Thorns and Orange Blossom by Bertha Clay. She was one of these pop things, you know, that they call, you know, if you write pot boilers or something. But honestly, it transformed my life. And I was not quite 11 years old when I read. That was the first book I ever read. Because I learned about the French. I learned about the English. I learned about history woven into a novel and everything. That was just, these were different people. This was different. It just seemed marvelous to me, you know. And from that time on, books became a passion with me. I read when I washed dishes. I read when I watched the baby. I read when I read by the candlelight, the lamplight.
What sort of books were you reading then?
Well, you know, the same rabbi that I told you had to ask my father to come, Hilkowitz. As a matter of fact, his son was here in San Diego. She was a librarian, and she noticed, she was very, very kind to me. I'll never forget about her. And she said, you know, honey, your taste is a little bit too Catholic. And of course, at that time, Catholic meant to be sicker. I said, oh, no, I'm not religious. She said, no, dear, Catholic means you're all-embracing too much and everything. So she said, you have to have a little more system in reading. I said, well, I just read because I love books. That's whatever I read. She said, but you read. I said, well, will you tell me what I should read? Well, then she gave me more historical books and everything. But it was very haphazard, you know.
How old were you when you stopped going to school?
Well, see, then from that book, then I read histories. And when I was in the 6th grade, Mr. Norville, a man who was the principal of the school and also a teacher. Now, he had a cork leg because he used to hit the kids like, but he was a scholar. And if he saw anyone had a real aptitude for reading, he was so good to me, dear. I'll always remember him. My children went to him, too. I revere him, really. He was so good to me. Well, Professor Marsh from Harvard was going around to the various schools, and he came to our grade, and he said, "When you children read history, because have any of you read history?" Well, I was 2 years older than the average one in the sixth grade. I was at that time already 13, and I should have been there at 11. So I said, I read some history, Professor. And he said, "What have you read?" I said, "I read about the French Revolution." He says, "What did you think of it?" I says, "Well, I didn't think they should have killed the poor Antoinette, because she couldn't help it. She was born into that kind of a thing." And I said, "Why blame her for the whole system?" And she said, "You think it was wrong?" I said, "Yes. But did you think she ought to be a queen?" I said, "Oh, I don't believe in kings and queens. I don't think anybody should be a king or queen. I don't know better than anybody else. No, I don't believe in kings." And at that time, I was 13. He said, "Well, what did you think of the rest of the French Revolution?" I said, and he meant about, he said about the little colonel, the little lieutenant that became the scourge of Europe. When your mind names sometimes slip, but you know who I mean. He made himself an emperor, and he found his Waterloo in Russia.
You're talking about Napoleon, right?
Yes, Napoleon. I said, "Well, I read about Napoleon." He said, "What did you think of Napoleon?" I said, "You know, in the beginning I liked him. I thought he was all right. But afterward he was no good. He made himself an emperor. He was no better. He was even worse than the others. So he was no good." He said, "Oh, that's remarkable. What else do you know of history?" I said, "Well, I read a little bit of our history, but not very much. We hadn't had United States history yet." He said, "What do you think of ours?" I think it's the only thing that I think is wonderful. I do think of America as the most wonderful of all, because they have democracy. How little I knew. And everything he had. You know, it impressed Mr. Norwood so much that when Professor Marsh went, he said to me, "You see, my name is really Barbara Best. My mother hated the name Barbara, and I never used it until I got in the movement, and then it was more or less as a camouflage." So he said, "Best, are you going down to the seventh grade? I would have to go to another school about 4 or 5 blocks away." And I burst into tears. I said, "Oh, Mr. Norville, you know, I really loved school. I really loved it." And I said, "You know, my father doesn't want to let me go anymore." He said, "Oh, he can't do that. Let me write a letter to your father and tell him that Professor Marsh said there is a fund that we will pay for all your books, for everything you need, but we want you to keep on going to school, and we will help you in every way possible. Professor Marsh is really very interested in you, dear." I said, "Is he really?" I was so surprised. I said, "Why?" He said, "Because he likes books and you like books, and I like books," he said. So he sent this letter to my father with me, and I said, "Papa, Mr. Norwood sent you a letter." He said, "All right, read it to me." So I read it to him. He says, "What did you mean by telling me it's none of his business about this?" You know, and when I burst into tears. I said, "Papa, let me go to school. Whatever I own afterward, I'll give it all to you. I don't want dresses. I don't care for anything else. But let me go to school, Papa." And I said, "Well, if the devil takes you, you don't care about Papa, Mama. You only care about the devil takes you to you." He said, "What can I do about it?" Well, you know, in my way, as much as I had contempt for my father, I loved him in a certain way. Because there were glimpses of things that he would do, little things, as horrible as he was. He beat my sister 2 years younger than myself once until she urinated all over the floor for me. What would an 8-year-old child have done to merit a thing like that? So he was, and my brothers, like that.
Did he treat the boys better than the girls?
He didn't treat the boys any better than the girls. That didn't enter in. He was even worse with the boys, because it was the governing, the praying, you know, and all my brothers ran away from home. The three brothers ran away from home, And one of them had such contempt for all of it that he threw the fiddle into the toilet to show his utter contempt for it. I said, why don't you burn it but not throw it? It should never throw reading matter in the toilet. You know, he says, now that's what how I feel about it. So, you know, he drove us away from it.
Did you end up continuing school then or not?
I don't know, but you see, then the only education I got was reading. Mm-hmm. I read novels, I read histories, I read everything of Scott, everything of Dickens, everything of, well, I read several of Thackeray, but you know, of all of Thackeray that I remember is Pendennis. Funny thing, isn't it, but of Dickens, I remember
Did they expect you to go to work then when you were 13?
Oh, I went to work when I was only 13. My mother got a dressmaker that I could go to work right away. And I got $2 for working 10 hours a day on a sewing machine.
You were actually operating the machine?
Yes. I began operating it. My mother bought a sewing machine the same time when I was 11 years old for $5 to get the top and... Instead of her learning how to sew, because she was only 25 years older than I learned how to sew and did all the sewing for the rest of the, all the time for all the rest of it. And then I wanted to learn, at least learn it right. There was a Mrs. Hatch, the mother of one of my schoolmates, who was a dressmaker and a very kind woman. She was a Catholic. Every year she had a baby, and her husband was a drunken bum, but she, so my mother took me to Mrs. Hatch to teach me. She says, honey, one thing I have to tell you, I know your father's an Orthodox Jew. You have to work Saturday if you feel you want me to teach you, because Saturday is our busiest day. It goes out for Sunday. So I burst into it. I said, oh, Mrs. Hatch, you know, my father will not let me work on Saturday and won't let me go to work on Saturday. She says, then, my dear, so when I burst in, she says, please don't cry. You only hurt me because I'm fond of you, dear, and I would like to help you, but I can't. This is my living, dear. I can't do it. So I couldn't. And when I was 16, I worked 1 week at the Underhill overall factory, and I ran a sewing power machine, and I was so anxious, not because I was sewing for our neighbors, poor Jewish people who, for 25 cents a dress, put on another little ruffle with my child's machinist in culture. No, and they hardly ever paid even at that.
So when you started when you were 13, then you were sewing mainly for individuals. It was not a factory situation.
No. The only time I worked in a factory was at Underhill's overall factory.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked for 1 week. And then Mr. Johnson was his name, he was the foreman. And I worked, my God, I turned out more work than five other people, you know, because I didn't want him to fire me. I knew when Shabbos was coming. So when Friday came, I went over and I said, Mr. Johnson, my father is an Orthodox Jew. You don't let me work on Saturday, but I'll make it up to you. I wondered why you were speeding up like you did. I couldn't understand it, but he said, you know, dear, I'm only the foreman here. I don't own Underhill. And Saturday is our busiest day, just like Mrs. Hatch. And I said, my father won't, you tell your father, if he wanted you not to work on Saturday, he should have gone to Jerusalem. This is the United States of America, and we work on the Sabbath, your Sabbath, because we don't keep your Sabbath. So you tell your father you have to either work or you don't get a job. And when I burst into his eyes, I says, please, Mr. Johnson, let me stay. He says, now, you know, your tears don't help me any. You only make me feel bad. I have children. And I can't do anything. I am only a foreman. I don't own it. So I watered the streets of Denver with my tears, but no job.
So what did you then do?
Sewing for the neighbors.
I see. And how much were you able to make a week doing that?
Oh, perhaps $2 a week.
And were you one of the... Your father was supporting the family, though, too?
Yes. My father never took my money.
Oh, you kept your own money?
Yes. Mm-hmm. $2 a week.
What did you then plan to do What did you think you were then going to do? What was your expectation? Were you planning on eventually getting married, or did you think?
Yes, that was about the only thing that I don't see. I had been engaged to a guy who was this. His mother had known my mother in Hungary. She was 12 years older than my mother, and he was a captain of the fire department. But he was 9 years older than I was. But he read a lot. And I just met him when we went to visit his mother. He was home from the fire department, and I met him then. And he asked me to go with him to B'nai B'rith, the kind of a picnic. And afterwards, and he read books, you know, which he was supposed to come to see us. And by that time, I was almost 18. And he was supposed to come over one evening, and he didn't come. We didn't have a telephone or anything anyway. But his father and mother were divorced, and his father was a shoemaker, and he was an old town son of a bitch. So my mother went to see him, and he told her that the reason Louis hadn't come, that he had had a shiksa, and that he was trying to, you know, get rid of her. So that's wow. So my mother comes home full of righteous anger or a thing like that. Write him a letter and tell him you don't care if you didn't come. And stupid me, the thing that really ruined my life, because I wrote him a letter.